American Le Mans Series Radio Network, live here from our vantage point overlooking the start-finish line of this superb facility. The American Le Mans Series cars being rolled out onto the wide pit apron. The two DHL Global Mail Penske Porsche RSs just going by from left to right in front of me down the pit lane. And we have a picture-perfect day. Temperatures already up into the high 80s at just before 11 o'clock here local time. Just before 6 o'clock with you back in the UK, 7 if you're listening in Europe, as we bring together the sports car community at www.0157.org and, of course, on the Sky Satellite platform, channel 0157, as well as AmericanLeMans.com. 23 different bends we've identified here at the Miller Motorsport Park, and as we were talking last night to a couple of the drivers, quite often if you hear large numbers like that talked about as far as corners are concerned, then they count every tiny little kink and slight movement left or right of the track. These, let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, are 23 very, very testing corners indeed. 4.486 miles for the full course. You can have two and a half, 2.7 mile configurations, but here for the American Le Mans Series this weekend, we do get the full Monty. Now, very few opportunities to test prior to this weekend. One or two of the teams and drivers have a little experience here, and notably the Penske Porsches. They were here doing some testing earlier on in the year, but the majority of the American Le Mans Series teams did not see this circuit before yesterday evening. And we had our usual familiarisation practice session with all of the classes getting an hour and a half on the track, the middle hour with everybody out there and half an hour either end for the prototypes and the production-based cars, the GT cars, respectively. And although it doesn't stand for anything for later on in the weekend, interesting to have a look at those times from last night. The two Porsche RS Spiders were quickest, the two LMP cars, 7 and 6. Timo Bernhard and Romain Dumas. Timo, I think, doing the time of 2:24.143. Unusual for me to go right to the third decimal place, but relevant in this context because their teammates Sascha Masson and Lucas Lehr with a 2:24.147. Now, interestingly, that's been rounded up, that difference, last night. It was 0.003 last night. It's gone out by a whole 1,000th of a second to 0.004 this morning. Those two cars completing 29 and 30 laps, which was around about the most. In fact, there was a couple of teams that completed 29 laps. One of the Aston Martins, the 007 car, and also the 31 Peterson White Lightning car, of which more later. But 30 laps, clearly the most amount completed last night in that session. In third position, the first of the P1 cars, and only 1.5 seconds behind the two Porsches. I don't think there'll be too much consternation down there in the Audi Sport North America Champion Camp. Right at pit out, to my far right, the western end of the pit lane here at Miller Motorsport Park. And it was Alan McNish who was the faster of the two drivers in the number two car. That is the car that leads the points championship, of course, in the Prototype 1 category in the American Le Mans Series. Their teammates, Frank Bieler and Emmanuel Pirro, we haven't seen them since Sebring. No finish for that car at Sebring with the problems with overheating that that car had, and the car was withdrawn. Emmanuel Pirro and Frank Bieler, though, in fourth position overall, second in the LMP1 class last night, about another half a second away from their teammates. The battle for the P1 championship very tight at the moment as we move into the second half of the season, with the James Weaver Butch Leitzinger car next up on the track and second in the points places for P1, 32 points in arrears of McNish and Capello. James Weaver with one win and two pole positions to his credit and Butch Leitzinger's credit already this season. Haven't had a lot of luck as far as the championship has gone. I haven't just said that. They did manage to net, as I say, one win. Their time down in fifth position overall at 2:26.446. So 6.3 seconds away from the fastest of the Porsches, but only 0.3 of a second away from the Audis. And again, I think that will prove some sucker to the Dyson team, who had some problems with the 20 car with overheating last night. Third place in P2 was claimed by Liz Halliday, John and Clint Field in the Intersport car. They were well down, some 8.7 seconds away from the fastest of the Porsches, the faster of the Porsches, and that really is a big amount of time, even on a 4.5 mile circuit. In the other categories, GT1 belonged to Aston Martin yesterday evening. They have a 90 kilogram advantage, weight advantage, on the two Pratt & Miller CompuAir GM Chevy Corvettes. Those guys were struggling a little bit last night, although right at the end of the session, Ollie Gavin managed to get within about a second of the, within half a second rather, of the Aston Martins ahead of him. And for the record, it was the 009 car of Stefan Sarrazin and Andrea Pacini it is this weekend, not Pedro Lamy, as it says here on this timing sheet, which slightly put me off there. Thomas Enger and Darren Turner was second behind their teammates, and literally just a full second behind them, almost exactly a full second behind them. Gavin and Beretta third in GT1, Fellows and O'Connell fourth. In the GT2 category, it was Jaime Melo and Mika Salo in what at the end of the session looked like a particularly second-hand Giuseppe Ricci Competizione 430 Berlinetta, a couple of trips into the gravel around the circuit, which is very dusty in the dry heat that we have here in Utah, made that normally pristine bright red Ferrari look, well, a little used, to be quite honest. They qualified in pole position, in fastest spot, should I say, in the GT2 category, ahead of Van Overbeck and Hensler for the Flying Lizards, Jörg Bergmeister and Pat Long, the next Porsche in line, in third position for Peterson White Lightning. And then it was Mike Rockenfeller and Klaus Graf, my apologies, in the Alex Job Racing car in fourth position. Fifth, Gunnar Jeanette, who does know this circuit better than most. He's an instructor here at Miller Motorsport Park in the Ford Mustangs, which are put together by Multimatic for the school here. And in rounding off the top six in the GT2 category, Darren Law and Seth Nyman making two Flying Lizard cars in the top six positions in GT2. Now, we're rather isolated from the action up here in terms of sound, so for those of you listening back in Europe or on the internet, I apologise for lack of sound from outside, but we are in an hermetically sealed box, basically, and there's nowhere for me to dangle effects microphones. We will get that sorted out for you before the race to bring you some of the full atmosphere of what we've got here at Miller Motorsport Park. Fantastic sound system here that a big crowd yesterday turned up for our open house, and we've already got a reasonable smattering of spectators around what are called the oases, the viewing oases here, with the covered grandstands at five or six strategic points around the circuit, all on raised areas and all with their own food and drink vendors behind them. Just pausing for a moment as one of the Audis just had a little wiggle, but I just think that was the driver trying to sort themselves out. All of a sudden the pit lane has become very quiet. We're right above Aston Martin Racing, the dark British Racing green of the Easy Ups, visible to me if I just look down. Mr. Enger down there just relaxing in the shade at the moment. That means that Darren Turner is out in that car, the 007 car. Good morning, gentlemen. Andrea Pacini just sitting up there, having climbed up the Aston Martin stepladder, which is beautifully turned out and nicely engineered, as one might. Sorry, Stefan Sarrazin. I can't see you for the reflection I'm getting here. That's why I'm moving around. So it's Andrea Pacini that's in the car, and Stefan who's in the... I wish. George Howard Chappell is suggesting that I may have had an early drink this morning. It's just I've got bad eyes, George. That's all it is, quite honestly. So they're nice and close to us, down below. Pano's team to their left, who were also installed in the pit lane. as we've already got one of the Corvettes coming into pit lane after an installation lap. Happy smiling faces down at Aston Martin, having taken their first victory of the American Le Mans Series season last time out at Lime Rock, and what a battle that was. A real dogfight, as we've come to expect, with the Pratt & Miller Corvettes going right down to the wire, 0.033 of a second the margin between those two cars after 2 3/4 hours of racing. First time starting to come in, and it is Darren Turner in the 007 Aston who is fastest at the moment. Times last night in that category, round around the 2.38, right around the 2.38 area. These first times coming in not competitive at the moment, as they're just an out lap. It does take a little while here with 4.5 miles to get everyone up to speed. Not great news for the Panos 51, which has come in. That car of Tom Milner Jr. and Gunnar Jeanette, the Multimatic Motorsports team Panos Esperanti, with the engine cover off, the bonnet off of that car. It's gone straight back on again, though, so clearly not anything too drastic to worry about. So the guys redo the bonnet pins, and we'll send that car fires up. Might just be able to hear that in the background. And the Pirelli Short Esperanti disappears into the distance. You're listening to the American Le Mans Series Radio Network, live from Utah, Miller Motorsport Park, with Michelin, A Better Way Forward. Still that time of Darren Turner's, with 11, so exactly half of the field already out recording times on this circuit. We're in a very beautiful part of America, and I would urge any of you who are listening on the internet, or indeed if you have internet access and you're listening on the satellite, go to the American Le Mans Series website, or indeed to the Miller Motorsport Park website, and get yourself a track map. Because with 23 corners, all of them named, by the way, and Alan Wilson, who took me round yesterday, gave me all of the rationale behind the names of the corners. And there are some very interesting stories behind those. In the GT2 category, Mike Rockenfeller has the fastest time at the moment, but that is, again, just an outlap. Now, here's the first times coming in, and Lucas Lehr and Timo Bernhard are straight down to business, as off has gone the 20 Dyson. What, 2.25.6, 2.26.9 for Lucas Lehr and Timo Bernhard. John Field drops into third place in the leading non-Porsche in P2. So the first three are P2 cars at the moment, 6, 7 and 37, and sad to report that the 20 Dyson is off. The red roll hoops just visible above the rear spoiler, and that car is not moving at the moment. An awful lot of pickup and rubber on the outside of the circuit. It may well be that that has just caused a problem. And the red flag has come out. Well, this is the first time we've seen in the LMS here a red flag, as Dennis Paul gets the red duster out right in front of me. And can't quite see the driver's helmet, but I think that might be... Well, let's not speculate until I can see it properly, because it's a very long way away from me. So, red flag then in this session, just 6.5 minutes old. You're listening to the American Le Mans Series live from Utah. It's John Hindhoff and the rest of the team. We'll be speaking to our guys, Jeremy Shaw and Doug Kelly, in the pits in just a few moments' time.
The American Le Mans Series. If they're on the track, they're on Globecast Radio.
Chris Dyson in the 20 Thetford no-cold machine. The reason for the red flag at the moment, everyone answers that call and comes into the pits, but again, such a long lap here that I can still see probably half a dozen or eight cars out on the circuit at various points. The viewing here, outstanding. The last time I could see as much of a circuit as from a single vantage point was actually looking at a road circuit in an oval. Lewes Motor Speedway, Texas Motor Speedway and Rockingham Motor Speedway, that's Rockingham in the UK, all have road circuits inside, and that's the only time I've ever been able to see as much of a road circuit as I am looking at now around this 4.5 miles of Miller Motorsport Park. Just after 6 minutes past 6 in the UK, 6 minutes past 11, people joining us all the time, don't forget studio@0157.org is the website, or the email address rather. In comes the Intersport racing car. And whilst we've got a short break, we'll just remind you what you're listening to. We'll be back in a second.
All the excitement of the American Le Mans Series, live and exclusive on Globecast Radio.
Globecast Radio.
At the front of the field is 200 mile per hour action as Le Mans winners Audi take on a clutch of a new prototype from Lola. American racing giant Penske will campaign the first new Porsche prototype since 1998, and they are there to finish second. In the production classes, Aston Martin battle Corvette and the hordes of Porsche 911s of Fast and Furious competition from Ferrari, BMW, and Peugeot, and newcomers Lexus. With four classes on the track together, there's more overtaking in one race than a whole season of F1. Exciting racing, exciting radio, exclusive live coverage of practice and qualifying, and of course, the race flag to flag. The American Le Mans Series, European style.
American attitude.
American attitude. Motor racing action from over there.
Over here.
Over here. Only on Globecast Radio.
Let's go down to the pit lane and to Doug Kelly, who's in at Dyson. Any news on what the problem is? That car clearly doesn't have fire at the moment. It's going to come back on the end of a tow rope.
John, they're checking into that situation right now. No one exactly certain what the cause was that sent Chris Dyson off course. I'll get back to you in just a moment when I have something a little more definitive.
So Kelly down in the pit lane. Jeremy Shaw will join me in just a second up here in the booth. In fact, even as I'm speaking, he is doing that. Good morning.
Good morning, John. Unfortunately, we seem to be having some problems with my backpack, so I can't get down to the pit lane. I was down there a couple of minutes ago just talking with Mick Casalo, actually, and asking him why it was that he, as an ex-Formula 1 driver with a wealth of experience, on his outlap, he was off the road, and he looked at me somewhat sheepishly and said, yeah, turn one, you see.
Yeah, he had a few moments, didn't he?
He did, yes. He'd be carried a goodly amount of gravel back in there. I just want to make sure there's no danger of that car being underweight.
It didn't seem to slow them down that much. They didn't have the fastest time last night at 2:46.0 in that Ricci Ferrari. Only one Ricci car here this weekend, the 62 car, which is the older of the two chassis. The brand new car that they had at Lime Rock sadly destroyed in that rather bizarre accident. We also lost one of our prototypes in that as well. It seemed that Tony Villander just lost it in the final corner at Lime Rock and then hit the stationary prototype on the outside of the last corner, and that car too badly damaged to be repaired in the time given, although we're told that we might see that before the end of the season.
Yeah, that's certainly good news, and I wasn't at Lime Rock Park, but I was last weekend in Toronto. I saw Mario Dominguez, who'd be driving that car, of course, with Tony Villander.
He was very quick,
and he had a fantastic time. He was thrilled, first of all, to get the call to come along and drive the car, and he really enjoyed driving the car, working with the team, and certainly he hopes to be back. He just thoroughly enjoyed it, and he was so disappointed that the car got wrecked he wasn't able to come do any more races, at least for a little while.
Both of those guys, brand new to the American Le Mans Series and brand new to Lime Rock, really did put a fantastic show together. Tony Villander plonked the car on pole position, an ex-international, an Italian Formula 3000 driver at least, and has done some sports cars in Italy and in Yerby Hills from Finland. But we'll see him by the end of the season. The BK Motorsports Mazda Mazda Speed Courage also not surviving that incident in any degree good enough to be thought to be out here, but hopefully if we don't see it at Portland next weekend. Tough part of the season this, Jeremy, with races coming thick and fast, three races in 4 weeks as we've got the green flag back out again. This really puts the strain on the teams as well as the drivers.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? You can't afford to make a mistake, because if you do, then you're going to be out not just for the end of that race, but for the next one or two as well. And certainly, great shame. The Mazda spun off first of all, didn't it? And it was it had to be at least 10 or 15 seconds before Villander came along and did exactly the same thing in exactly the same corner. Very strange.
Yeah, it could have been. I think we had about 20 minutes of yellow flag running while it was all cleared up. It was quite a big incident, but testament once again to the respective strength of the of the Courage and the Ferrari. That both drivers walked away with nary a scratch. I think Vilander had a little bit of a limp, but that was all. No broken bones.
That was probably after he got back to the pit lane, wasn't it?
And Dominguez kicked him, yeah. Could well have been. Could well have been. Got the cars back out again now, and they won't like this interruption because there's still a lot of work to do here. Everyone we spoke to yesterday, Jeremy, after the test session, and all the guys we spoke to last night at the fan forum at the club here, the splendid club, in between the last couple of corners here at Miller Motorsports Park, all said exactly the same thing, that there was no way you could have predicted what this track was like just by looking at the track map. You really have to come here, and they all, I think pretty much all of them, have enjoyed the experience so far.
Absolutely. Certainly the ones I've spoken to have. They really enjoyed the challenge here, and you know, it's a long track, as you said already. It's 4.5 miles. It's a long way around here, and there aren't too many visual reference points. Most of the track is fairly flat. There is some elevation change built in, and particularly for the fan areas, it's great spectator viewing here. You can see from, locations around the racetrack, you can see 90, 95% or even 100% of the racetrack. It's a remarkable place, but it is difficult for the drivers. They think they're in the second gear corner and they're in the fourth gear corner, or even worse, they think they're in the fourth gear corner and in the second gear corner. That's what happened to James Weaver yesterday evening. He put that car off the road, but you know, it's a challenge, and you know, and not only, it's not just one driver that has to learn the track in a fairly limited amount of track time. Both drivers, of course, have to get out there and learn the track, so you know, that cuts down on the availability of getting into the car. You want to be out there yourself for the whole 2 hours to really learn the track, but you know, you have to split it between the two drivers.
Seems odd to be talking about next year already, but I just wonder what times the teams will get down to, having been here this year, possibly having some testing here during the winter, because obviously it's going to be with the climate here in Utah, it's going to be a prime testing venue for the American Le Mans series, and indeed for other cars from other series. And I do wonder just exactly how quick we'll get round here when we come back in a year's time to this venue. But let's concentrate on what's going on at the moment. We have cars going round again. Improvement for David Brabham, who pops up into third position in GT2 with a 3.07. That time will come down. We have had a red flag here. That was for Chris Dyson. Let's find out what's going down there in the Dyson pit. I saw the 20 car, Doug, being brought back by one of the IMSA Chevy safety teams, but it hasn't come back into pit lane. What's going on?
Well, John, what happened, it did actually come back into the pit lane. They replaced all four tires, took a look at the back end, and it's back out there. So whatever the initial problem was seems to have been corrected pretty easily.
Thanks. And did Chris stay at the wheel there, Doug?
Chris did indeed stay at the wheel.
Right, so he's back out on the track. So it was just literally a wipe down and a turnaround. And so we will now start scanning the track in front of us. I still find it slightly off-putting, Jeremy, to see cars going left to right in front of me, then right to left in the near foreground, and then left to right again further afield, and then still once more there's a fourth line of cars going from right to left again in the very far distance, and just trying to work out exactly where those are on the track and which parts of the lap they are is still something that I'm getting to grips with, and to be honest, it doesn't take a lot to confuse me, but I am claiming that there's quite a lot going on here,
and that's just on the eastern end of the racetrack as well, isn't it?
I don't look to the right. That really is just too much for my poor little adult brain to take in. Lucas Lowe with that time of 2:25.6 is still the fastest man out on the circuit at the moment. Timo Bernhard 1.3 seconds behind in the team car, 6 and 7. So places reversed from last night. And then 7.8 seconds behind John Field, who is in third place in the Prototype 2 category, third place overall. We're now getting James Weaver to start to come up to speed. He's dropped into fourth position in the 16 Thetford Norcal Dyson car. That's the one with the darker roll hoops, sort of a dark greeny blue colour, whereas the 20 car has the bright fluorescent red roll hoops. That's how to tell those two cars apart. Andy Wallace going very well early this morning, just 0.2 seconds from his erstwhile teammate James Weaver in the number 9 blue and yellow Highcroft Racing Lola. That's one of last year's Dysons, in fact, the number 9 car. And behind them, Emmanuel Pirro in 6th position for Audi Sport North America, finding it hard not to say champion, because it is Dave Mirage's team that's running Audi Sport North America's effort here. In the past, that has been run by Yost, as the two car whispers by. Alan McNish now at the wheel and drops into third position, but still 4 seconds away from those Penske Porsches, who are really showing a turn of speed here this week already. But they have got an advantage that they've got a setup. They've been here before, Jeremy, and that's been key in this early running.
I think so, particularly on a track like this, you know, as you say, it's all about experience, getting track time and learning which way, learning the nuances of the racetrack. There's lots of sequences of corners here, and you know, you might get one corner right, but if you get that one corner right, it might not be the optimum line into the next corner. And that's the key, is learning the transitions from one corner to the next, one series of corners to the next. So it's all about experience. And Alan McNish, and that was probably his first flying lap this morning, so a 2:29, as you say, 4 seconds slower than the best set by Lucas Oil. Looking a little bit farther down the charts in GT2, Wolf Hensler has just set the fastest time there in the Flying Lizards car, and Brian Sellers has done a 2:52 in the PTG BMW. It's car number 22, the second of the PTG cars, and encouraging that team was really struggling yesterday. We're about 4 seconds off the Porsches, well, off the Ferrari, I should say, it set the pace yesterday evening, but at least already an improvement in Brian's time from yesterday. About a second quicker he has gone this morning in the car that he shares with Justin Marks.
Yeah, and both of those cars a little outgunned for power, I think, here. Remember, they're the straight six BMW M3s run by the Prototype Technology Group under Tom Milner, who is here this weekend. Had a long chat with him yesterday. Always a pleasure to talk to Tom, one of the real stalwarts of American road racing. He knows his onions.
It's never like to be a short conversation with Tom, is it?
Fair point. Well made, nicely presented, Jeremy. I do like talking to Tom because he doesn't pull punches. He's a racer, out-and-out racer, likes to be competing. Now, down the front straight, there goes Emmanuel Pirro, in the number one Audi, just going by the Ron Fellows GM Chevy Corvette, which is now in second position, splitting the Aston Martins of Darren Turner and Andrea Pacini. Andrea, first time in the American Le Mans Series, been plying his trade in the FIA GTs and doing a reasonably good job as well in one of the privateer Aston Martins that are doing so well. Aston, with this DBR9, have done a splendid job making sure that not only the works cars, the team cars that are here this weekend, but that the variety of teams that are running those cars, and in fact the GT3 versions of those cars, I think something like 12 cars now already out and running, and scope for some more. Very interesting to talk to David Richards at Le Mans. I mean, we're given access to the Aston Martin VIP area on Saturday morning before the Le Mans 24 hours, and managed to link up David Richards, the top man at ProDrive, with Dr. Uli Betts, who was racing at the Nürburgring in the 24 hours. And very interesting conversation, committing Aston Martin Racing to a full series over here in America, full season this year, and saying that he can't imagine a situation where Aston's wouldn't be racing here in 2007 in some way, shape or form. Pointedly not saying that it was necessarily going to be Aston Martin Racing and ProDrive, but I do think there's something that we might hear shortly. And talking about announcements, we do have in a week's time the announcement from Acura of their prototype teams. Three teams for next year running the Acura motor in the P2 category, and waiting to see who those will be. Rumours abounding at the moment. We'll not get into that kind of speculation just at the moment, but I have heard one team's name come up more than others, and I wait expectantly for
don't,
that next week.
Don't tease us.
No, I can't. I'm sworn to secrecy. I was given the information under lobby circumstances. It's a team that will be instantly recognisable, not necessarily in sports cars at the moment, but that one comes up time and time again, and I do think that the other two teams as well will also be, one of them I think is likely to be a bit of a surprise, but that is potentially then another 3, 4, 5 or indeed 6 cars in the prototype category for next season with the Acura Motors very interesting to see exactly how that pans out next week. Meantime, back to the timing screens, Jeremy.
Yeah, Lucas Lua has improved his time this morning, a 2:25.687, so within a second and a half of the best he did yesterday, and we're only 22 minutes into this session this morning. Conditions probably a good bit warmer now than it was yesterday evening, so that's on the negative side in terms of finding speed on the track. On the plus side, a bit more rubber laid down as we're getting more cars, you know, getting used to the track and getting out on the circuit, so you know, getting more rubber down is definitely going to improve the track times, improve the speeds. But as I say, it is a little bit warmer now. It's probably, what, well up into the 90s now, isn't it, in Fahrenheit here? What's that in Senegal? I've been over in the US too.
I can't do that.
Anyhow, it's sort of mid-30 degrees centigrade, so it's pretty warm out here, but it is a dry heat.
Very dry.
The track condition this morning is certainly very good. They've blown off the track overnight. They got rid of all the dust of people like Mika Salo and James Weaver and all these other guys.
Everybody had a little gourd for various times.
Well, boy, there's a lot of cars off the road, and it just brings little bits of dirt and gravel and onto the racetrack, and it makes it very, very slippery. So the track guys here have done a very good job in cleaning it off. I'm sure we're going to see times tumbling down within the next 15, 20 minutes, I would expect.
Difficult to say what the guys are actually trying to achieve at the moment, as out rumbles the Pinos Esperante, the 51 car, back into the fray from its pit stall just to our left. Because normally at this stage, you'd expect people to be doing things like fuel consumption runs, trying to get a race set up, and then in the next hour-long session, right before the qualifying session, if there's going to be any changes made for qualifying, then that's when it's going to be done. But at the moment, I think they're still just doing data acquisition, aren't they?
Yeah, I think they are.
Driver
data acquisition, driver learning the racetrack. They're not yet covered. Andy Wallace told us yesterday evening he was driving like a Wallachi. He was not happy with the way he was driving that car at all. He hadn't got used to the track yet. So he's got to get out there. You've got to get the miles in. You've got to learn the nuances of this racetrack.
A lot of corners. We mentioned this yesterday, but now with the international audience with us again over there in the UK and Europe, bears repeating. Majority of these corners actually open out, and getting to the apex is the key here, actually finding the right way and the right line into the apex to try and carry as much speed as possible. Getting out is something that you should be trying to get on the power as early as possible. Now that normally goes without saying in motor racing, but the way the circuit is being laid out by Alan Wilson, who's done just a phenomenal job here. Clearly was a great devotee of Scale Extric in his youth and had a relatively small bedroom, because he's fitted so many different types of corners and challenges for the drivers into a relatively compact space. Now that sounds odd for those of you listening not at the track when we say it's a 4.5 mile track, but it's a relatively small space. But there's actually a lot going on in just a small area here.
Well, you're talking about, you know, getting off the corners, and not only getting off the corners, we're setting it for the next one as well. Looking out of our booth here, we're looking at a quite an interesting section through the cars. Initially, as you said earlier on the start-finish line, they're going from our left to our right, but coming back around the track on the back side, there's a section here, the corner names are Fast, and then Faster, and then Gotcha is the next one, the left-hander.
That kind of explains itself, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. You think you can go quicker and quicker, and then when you get to Gotcha, you find out you're
going
quickly into there. But what's interesting, looking at the lines from our perspective here, through Fast and Faster, through the Faster, the second of those two flat-out right-handers, the cars are drifting out towards the middle of the road. But then Gotcha is a left-hander, and what you really need to be is right over to the right-hand side of the track. So the key, I think, is to give up a little speed in a second of those right-handers, the Faster corner, and then get yourself right over to the right-hand side, even on that red and white rumble strip on the right before you turn into the left, because then you can carry the speed through that next corner. So it's very interesting watching the lines and watching different drivers trying to figure out that complex of corners.
Yeah, and it's really nice to see cars moving around, and we are seeing that four-wheel drifts on a number of these corners, because although there are 23 turns here, there are a lot of places where the cars get up to over 150, 160 miles an hour, even for the GT cars, and the prototypes down the main straight. I haven't had confirmation of the data from the guys. I must nip down to the sharp end of the pit lane and have a word with them, see what we can eke out of them. But I'm looking at what's going on, and I'm thinking probably somewhere around about 180 miles an hour at the end of the straight, and I only base that on the fact that it takes quite a long time for them to drag past the Astons and the Corvettes, because obviously they've got all the grunt with the 6 and 7 litre motors and all the talk that that brings. And you only normally see the prototypes beginning to drag ahead of those cars at 165, 170 and above. Even at Le Mans, it's exactly the same. It takes them some time to actually drag by them.
And it is a heck of a long straight, 3,500 feet, so what's that, you know, 1,100 yards or so. And not only that, but it's slightly downhill, and they're coming off a banked corner, nine degrees of banking in that final corner. Release, it's called, right in front of the Speedway Club here. And a banked corner, no one's this long, long straightaway. Yeah, serious speeds. Some improvements in lap times. Lucas Lure has improved once again. 225.5 now, the fastest time of the day. That's just over a second slower than yesterday. Darren Turner has just done 238.6 in the quickest of the Aston Martins. Actually a hair quicker than he went yesterday. So the Aston Martin team getting some improvements there already. In GT2, Jaime Melo now has got the fastest time at 245. And that again is quicker than he went yesterday. So improvements up and down the field.
And that comes down to something we were talking a lot about last night and yesterday, and even when we left here last night. This is about driver confidence. They are beginning to understand. Remember what Jeremy was saying before about how these corners fit together as an entity and not just taking the corners as single things, because there's a lot of compromises here. You can't always take what would normally be thought of as the classic geometric racing line, the shortest line between the two points. Is not always the place you need to be, because it puts you in the wrong part of the racetrack for the next set of corners. And of course, if that corner runs onto anything like a bit of straight or a where you don't have to brake for a little while, then it's the final one of those complex of corners that counts. So you can throw away one, two, or maybe three turns before that to get the final one right, the one that will be the one that just watching where the Pinos is almost dropping a couple of wheels off onto the final corner there, just trying to get a bit extra speed. Yeah, sorry, the last corner of any complex is the one that's most important, because that will be the one that makes your speed down the straight and determines what your terminal velocity will be before you brake the next time around. And these compromises are all things that the drivers are finding out at the moment, Jeremy.
They are indeed. And that Pinos that you were watching there was Gunnar Jeanette. He makes an improvement this morning, 248.002, which is only a couple of tenths slower than he managed yesterday. That puts him, fourth in GT2 at the moment. So Jaime Melo there still leading the way for the Ricci Competizione Ferrari, 245.7. His last lap around, 246.5, so about three-quarters of a second slower on the last lap for Melo there, the young Brazilian. He's got about a second in hand at the moment over Jörg Burgmeister in the car number 31 for the Peterson White Lightning team. So it's the Ferrari's looking very, very good here, as of course it has for the last few races in the series. But Jaime is really getting on the case, and Mika Salo has not yet been out in the car this morning.
I'm slightly surprised, given the success that car has had in Europe, and the continued success that new 430 has in Europe. A lot of excitement about that car, first of an official Ferrari sports car for quite some time, the 550s and the 575s, not given the blessing of Maranello. But that 430, the first international sports car to come out of Ferrari officially for quite some time. And it does surprise me that with the speed that it's shown in the American Le Mans Series, with the success it's had already in Europe, in FIA, in the Le Mans Series, with people like Scuderia Cross and Andrea Cicotti's team, people like that, campaigning the car, I'm slightly surprised that there aren't more of them over here, Jeremy, because there is a big following for Ferrari over here in the States.
Yeah, good point. It's a super pretty car as well, isn't it? It really is an attractive machine, and it would be great to see another few of those.
And no disrespect to Porsche, because Porsche, the guys at Porsche Cars North America, Porsche Motorsport North America under Uwe Bretel now, of course, they do what they do very well indeed. And the new 997, the RSR, out next year, I think a little over $300,000 is the purchase price for a turnkey race car. That sounds like a lot of money. It is a lot of money.
Have you put your order down yet?
Of course I have, yes, with all the spare money that I've got, yes. Of course. I think Eve, listening at home, Mrs. H, will be cringing, even as you said that, Jeremy, and just checking to make sure that the house is in both of our names now, so I can't do things like that. Porsche, though, they've done what they've done over the years very well with the 911, but it is the ubiquitous car in GT2 racing, and just to have a bit of variety is something quite nice, and quite often having something different to show to a sponsor or a potential sponsor isn't a bad thing.
Hats off to you there, absolutely, completely agree. So we've got the Ferrari, the Porsche, the Pinos, they've already won at Sebring this year. Good to see the BMWs perhaps get some sort of a little break, because clearly the BMWs of PTG Group, Tom Milner's cars, don't appear to quite have the pace of these other cars. They've been developed a lot more over the last couple of years, and it's a shame to see the BMWs struggling a little bit. So if I might lobby a little bit on their behalf, it would certainly be great, because we've got some super drivers there, Bill Orbelin and Joey Hand and Brian Sellers and Justin Marks, all very, very good drivers, and if they can't keep up, you know, to the tune of 2 or 3 seconds, then clearly there's a little bit of performance disadvantage, I believe, to the BMWs right now.
And coming off the back of a race where there were much more competitive and running in the top three, top six for all of the race at Lime Rock, it does show that that certainly isn't a chassis problem. They say BMW is the ultimate driving machine, and certainly has, in handling terms, always been the equal of anything in the GT2 or 3, depending on what it was called, in that smaller of the GT categories. It is just grunt. And there's no substitute for cubic inches, they say, over here.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, because there's no doubt about it. This is a handling track. You've got to get the car balanced absolutely right. It's really got to handle properly. Power, though, is still an important factor. And I'm sure those BMWs are handling well, but they just don't have the pace. Coming off the corners, I think, is where they're losing out.
I just wonder, you know, Tom Milner doesn't come into anything to finish second. Long time back is Yokohama, still with him. Had a single outing last year to celebrate the Yokohama anniversary at Petit Le Mans, if memory serves. Quite surprised to see them bringing these cars back, because they are slightly long in the tooth, the M3s, and I don't say that detrimentally at all. And I just wonder if it's perhaps a precursor to a new effort from BMW. All kinds of developments going on, certainly in Europe at the moment, with the Z4 Coupe, which is being developed into certainly a VLN car, the series of races that are run exclusively on the Nordschleife, the long track at the Nürburgring, including the 24-hour race. That car, that new Coupe, already being developed into that. Haven't seen the car in the flesh, but seen a lot of pictures of it. The guys at Race Car Engineering in the UK, which is I might just give them a little plug. Fantastic, fantastic work that Sam Collins and all the guys that down there do.
Here's an improvement on the racetrack. Romain Dumas, sorry to interrupt you there, John, look at that.
Seven car back under the 25 and a half second mark, the 225. That's within 0.4 of what he did yesterday evening. Sacha Masson now at the wheel of the six car. And Sacha will not want to be outpaced by the other team. In fact, is within half a tenth. So this is, again, exactly what we saw last night, Jeremy. The two cars going out, getting down to a pace, which seems, and looking at the body language of the car out there on the circuit, we don't see those cars dropping wheels off. We don't see those cars squirming around. And this may well send shivers up and down parts of the pit lane, but 2:25.4 seems to be a relatively easily attainable time for those two Penske Porsches.
It does indeed. An average speed of 112 miles an hour around this 4.5 mile racetrack. An improvement also for Emanuele Pirro there, car number one, the Audi, the R10 TDI there. And I just saw him go through the infield flashing his lights at the Peterson White Lightning Porsche. And I think the Porsche smartly got out of the way, led him through, but Pirro turning some quicker laps now. It's still 3.5 seconds slower, though, than the Porsches. Another improvement for Jaime Mello in the Ricci Competizione Ferrari. 2:45.0, and that's a whole second quicker than he went last night.
And
it helps when you keep the car on the racetrack, doesn't it?
Yeah, the car's a lot cleaner today, so it's obviously a lot slippier through the air. And it's been polished overnight, and back to more of what we expect to see from Giuseppe Ricci's car. A stickler for preparation, and those cars are normally so clean you could eat your lunch off it. Last night you couldn't have eaten your dinner on it. Well, you could have, you just got a mouthful of grit.
Yes, it was not very pretty at all when it came back, was it? But yeah, you're right, they've got that car absolutely pristine again overnight, and good to see it just made the pits up there. I think Jaime may perhaps stayed in the car, and it's just gone out back out onto the racetrack.
little bit of dust and dirt just coming out from the Aston Martin. That's right. Actually, that might be steam standing on tiptoes. Now, is that coming from brakes? Or is that more sinister? George Howard Chappell's out there and he doesn't seem too concerned. Makes his way back under the protection of the awning. As the sun is getting quite intense out there now, almost at its zenith, the shadow's shortening up here. And this morning when I got in the hire car to come up, it was already in the low 90s out in the sun. And it will only be getting fiercer. Triple digits forecast for this weekend. Interesting comment that Doug Feehan made last night at one of our fan forums, Jeremy, about the difference between humid heat and dry heat. He was saying that they weren't too concerned, even if the temperatures did go up into three figures, because they were fairly certain that with the dryness in the air, that the drivers would be relatively comfortable. Oh yes, that Aston has been off, hasn't it? That was the 007 car. You can't hide when there's that much dust around. Yeah, Doug's saying that if the air is dry, then it allows the sweat and the moisture from the drivers to evaporate. And if that's the case, then the body is actually working quite well. And so long as you keep them cool and hydrated, the temperatures, obviously it's, you know, it's a difficult environment inside a race car, but the temperatures shouldn't bother the drivers too much.
No, the drivers don't seem too upset. They have a sort of an air conditioning system in those cars as well, in the Chevys, don't they?
Yes, they do, blowing cooled air, some 30 degrees cooler than ambient, into the helmets. That not only cools the head but allows them to breathe this filtered cooled air, and their theory is that it cools from the inside out. Now Aston go the opposite way, and in fact we can see with the drivers in front of us the intricate patterns that are described on the yes, Darren Turner there comes out just to show off and model the capillary piping on the cool seat, and cold water pumped through there every minute or so, which is fine, so long as it keeps working. Because if the water is warm that's being pumped round, then you get gently poached.
Yeah, poached. Yes, right, poached drivers. Not improvement there for Emanuele Pirro in the car number one. The Audi has just done pretty quick laps. A 227.0 followed this time around by a 227.1. So Pirro's inching closer now to the Porsches, just about a second and a half behind.
Yeah, and that's about where they were last night. Be interesting to see if they can find a little bit extra on the performance side and where that might come from. I wonder if they'll even bother chasing the Porsches. The two car leads the championship at the moment from the 16 car, and those are the cars are just 0.047 of a second between them. James Weaver not making any indiscretions this morning, and he is closing in on the back of Dindo Capello. Really, they haven't had the best of luck, still working against that new car syndrome that they have with that new P1 Lola. Martin Berain and the guys at Lola very, very excited about this new design. The car shares a lot of DNA with the P2 version of the new Lola, which we've seen out in Europe, Chamberlain, Synergy and others running that car. But there are some significant differences, and Dyson really the first team to take up the cudgels and decide to run that car. And at the moment, James Weaver in fifth position.
Good point that you raised there, that it's developed from the P2 car, and you know, maybe that's causing a problem or two. We've seen the Dyson team struggle with just niggly little things, and you know, we're going from the P2 to the P1, good bit more weight, but more horsepower as well, and it puts more strain on all the components, of course.
Let's have a look at the times. We've got just under 20 minutes to run in this practice session here for the American Le Mans Series in the Grand Prix of Utah this weekend here at Miller Motorsports Park. It's the two Audis. The third and fourth, because ahead of them they've got the two. See, I'm conditioned to say it's the two Audis at the head of the field. It's in fact the two Porsches at the head of the field, the Penske DHL Global Mail cars, 7 and 6, as they were last night. Just half a tenth of a second between Romain Dumas and Sacha Masson, who are in those cars at the moment. Emmanuel Pirro just closes in to half a second, and that's as close as those cars have been since the start of practice this week. Emmanuel Pirro with a 226.0, just half a second then away from the two Porsches ahead of him. Emmanuel Pirro now some 4 seconds away from the fastest Porsche and 3.5 seconds away from his teammate. So clearly, Emmanuel Pirro has found the key to unlocking some part of this Miller Motorsports Park. Dindo Capello in fourth. Fifth, Butch Leitzinger now taking over from James Weaver in the 16 car. The 20 car is next up, but they have a 3 second gap between themselves and their teammates, and they are 7.5 seconds away from the Porsches.
But interesting to compare these times to yesterday. Romain Dumas and Sascha Masson in the two Penske Porsches, 25.4, 25.5, 2 minutes 25.4, 2 minutes 25.5 today. Yesterday, they both did 2:24.1, so 1.3 seconds quicker yesterday evening than they're going right now. The Audi of Pirro, however, he's gone a tenth quicker today than he went yesterday. So I think they're certainly making strides with that car, and I'm wondering now whether it's that the ambient temperature here that is making that difference and bringing the Audi closer to the Porsches.
Well, now here's a thought as well. The Porsches have been here before, so they start with an advantage. So maybe they haven't got that much more time to find. Certainly not in the setup. Whereas the driver Sascha Masson, I don't think, was one of the guys who came and tested here. So, you know, maybe those guys haven't got quite as much time to find and set up and confidence in the drivers as, say, the Audis and the Dysons and indeed anybody else down the pit lane.
I think you're right. Let's look down to GT2. We still see the Ricci Competizione Ferrari at the head of the pack there, 2:45.0. It is Mika Salo in the car right now. His last lap was a 2:47.4, so a couple of seconds away from the best that Jaime Mello, his teammate, did a little bit earlier on this morning. In second place now, Mike Rockenfeller for Alex Job Racing, the Porsche, a 2:46.3 was his best lap, the last lap that he completed, and that's about, what, a second, 1.2 seconds slower than the quickest Ferrari. So he's moving in there. The Porsche's getting a little bit closer. Wolf Henson is still third in that class, and Patrick Long, who improved a lap or two ago, he is running fourth in class at a 2:46.7. So the top four cars covered by about a second and three quarters.
And in GT1, Thomas Enger in the 007 Aston Martin holds sway at the moment by half a second from Olivier Beretta in the number 4 GM Chevy Corvette. That's the one with the black shade band, for those of you who are here at Miller Motorsport Park. Their teammates, Johnny O'Connell and Ron Fellows. Johnny at the wheel of the 3 CompuAir GM Chevy Corvette. That's the one with the bright sort of fluorescent orangey-red shade band on it. And then Andrea Pagini, who is now in the 009 car. Stefan Sarrazin still sits under the Aston Martin shade right in front of us, watching proceedings. The top four cars in GT1 separated by about 0.7 seconds, no, a little bit more than that, by about 1.4 seconds. So a bit more open than it is. Is normally.
Yeah, but then 1.4 seconds around, yeah. You know, 2 minutes.
That's a missed apex here, isn't it?
Yeah, well, there you go, exactly right. So it is pretty tight there between those four cars, the two Astons and the two Chevrolets, and that's exactly what we want to see.
I'm just wondering how the guys are going to attack the qualifying session later on. It is only 20 minutes, and we're looking forward to that already. We've got another practice session at 3 o'clock local time. That's at 10 o'clock back in the UK, and we will be covering that live here on the American Le Mans Series Radio Network, and we'll roll straight from that into the two 20-minute sessions. The GT cars coming out first at around about 10 past 4 local time for 20 minutes, and then at 20 minutes to 5, 4:40 local, we'll be having the battle for pole position. And I'm just wondering how people are going to attack this, Jeremy. Quite often we see a bit of mind games and tactics in the American Le Mans series. It's not a long session. Some people do tend to sit on the airjacks in the pit lane. I'm not sure you can afford to do that here with an outlap that can be sometimes 4 or 5 minutes. If we get a red flag in one of the sessions and you haven't been out there, you could be throwing away a decent grid spot.
You could. Even at best, you're only going to get 7 or 8 laps, even if you're out there for the whole time.
And that's a good point.
You're going to use up the best of your tyres in that time span. So, yeah, you're right. It's going to be quite an interesting session. And as I say, you know, there's no doubt about it. The drivers are still learning their way around this racetrack.
Mike Lewis in the 12 Autocon car. That's was the sister car to the 9 car last year. Those two cars now in separate hands, in separate teams campaigning them. Mike Lewis has been impressing me this weekend as he's got down to business. He's got Brian Wilman one of the great characters of the American Le Mans Series, back with them this weekend. And they've been picking up points, you know. They've done all right. Mike is third in the P1 point standing at the moment. He's had a number of co-drivers. And this season so far, his finishes have been 5th, 4th, 3rd and 2nd. It'll be interesting to see if that progresses this weekend. It would be a bit of a shock if they were to stand on the top step of the P1 podium, but it's not beyond the bounds of possibility, of course. The car has certainly got the speed. And they did, of course, run first in class for the first time. In fact, did they lead the race overall? Yes, they did on pit stops at Lime Rock Park, as Doug Kelly reminds me in my left ear. Thank you, Doug, for reminding me that. So the car clearly, and the team, car has the speed, the team have the strategy. Need a bit of luck, I think, if he's going to go 5-4-3-2-1 in the first five races of the American Le Mans Series season. But, don't count them out of it. I don't like to wish ill on anyone, but I'm sure they'll be having the little voodoo dolls out for certain people up and down the pit lane. Third position, as I say, in the P1 drivers standing for Mike Lewis. Now we're moving into the last 12 minutes or so of this session. Quick word for the 37 Intersport Racing team, running on the Goodyear rubber this weekend, of course. Haven't mentioned them a lot. We keep talking about first and second in P2 because those two Porsches are at the head of the timing and scoring monitor in front of us, but Clint Field in that car at the moment, along with Liz Halliday and his father John Field. Well, of course, Clint and Liz are the Liz in the car at the moment, I'm just being told, so the timing screen is trying to give us a little bit of duff information at the moment, and I bid, so my apologies. Thank you, Doug. They are the points leaders at the moment. Two wins in the category. The best qualifying that they had was at Mid-Ohio, was a second, winning at Sebring, of course, and at Houston, from memory, with the problems that befell, the early season problems that befell the Penske Porsches. But they're in this for the long run. Liz was saying last night again that they know. They are very realistic. They don't have the pace of the Porsches, but they just want to keep picking up points.
That's right. And you know, endurance racing, it's right there in the title. It's all about consistency and being there at the end, and that's what that team has done this year, and that's why they are still right up there in the, you know, right in contention for that P2 championship. As you said, leading the series by 5 points coming into this weekend over Sascha Madsen and Lucas Laur in the quickest of the Porsches. And there's no doubt about it, the Porsches are a heck of a lot quicker. Mm. There's a lot more money in that program as well, let's face it. But here, you know, there's 9 seconds between those cars here on the racetrack.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Now, I don't think that will be indicative of race pace. We have seen, you know, when people always say, oh dear, look at the times after qualifying. And, you know, that means that at the end of 2 hours and 45 minutes, they're going to be 10 laps up on the field. Well, it's not going to happen like that. It never does, because traffic gets in the way, things happen at pit stops, there's yellow flags, and no one runs at qualifying pace for a whole 2 hours and 45 minutes. And indeed, at the moment, we've got Sascha Madsen's car in the pit lane with the rear bodywork taken off. Now, interestingly, although those two guys in the 6 car are the better placed of the two Porsche teams, they actually haven't taken a win this year. And that's a source, I think, of some consternation to both Sascha and to Lucas. They do feel, I think, they did feel a little bit aggrieved at Mid-Ohio when the team took a 1-2. But they felt perhaps that they might have been given the nod that day. They have taken, I think, a couple of pole positions this year. And obviously they have speed in that car. Now the front body works off that car as well. Again, let's not we're not reading anything into this, nothing too sinister. Still some changes being made, more fine tuning, I think, at Porsche than probably most anyone else is doing.
I think you're right, and 3 seconds and a third they've had in the 4 races this season, so certainly some good results, but yeah, they definitely won that first win, don't they? Let's have a look again now. GT1, an improvement there for Thomas Enger. He's out in the 007 Aston Martin, improves his time, 2 minutes 38.1, so Thomas from the Czech Republic, of course, he's getting his act together, getting the times down there, and he's now what's shown as almost a full second quicker than the Ollie car, the Ollie Holly Chevrolet of Olivia Beretta and Oliver Gavin.
And those times are just going out again now, because there's another second between the Ollies and Johnny O'Connell, who's still at the wheel of the 3GM Chevy Corvette. Half a second between Andrea Pacini and the second of the Astons, fourth place in GT1. Andrea still certainly finding his feet in this team, but he was full of smiles yesterday evening in the pit walkabout that we had to the Auburn House. Certainly knows the car, has been campaigning a private version of the Aston in the FIA GTs, who raced last at Oschersleben, which is again a complete contrast to what we have here. Oschersleben, an old go-kart track of a circuit in the middle of Germany, and he was right in the mix there, battling with the Zach Speed Selene and the two Vitaphone Maseratis. And in fact, that's him just into the pit now. Yes, it is. Just goes through into his pit stall. And Stefan Sarrazin gets in. Dark visor for Andrea Pacini on the full face helmet. And very sensible indeed. I did notice yesterday when I was walking around. We have the benefit of very highly tinted glass in the booth. But towards the end of the day, when I'd been outside for a while, I was squinting a lot, having left my sunglasses in the hotel, which I've done exactly the same thing again. It is very tiring. The light here is, the brightness here is unremitting. And the drivers all deciding to take some kind of tint, but Pacini's is the darkest one I've seen. It's absolutely limo black.
I just wonder how those guys can see out of those things. I do some driving myself, and I don't wear sunglasses in general. I don't know. I probably should, I suppose. But it's what you're used to, isn't it? And I look through some of these visors these guys have, and I think, gee, how can you pick out all the little, just the little things that you need to see when you're driving these race cars at these sort of speeds? I don't know how they do it.
I favour a slight tint, a smoke or a grey tint if I'm going to have one. I did have a very nasty experience a few years ago with a very black visor like Pacini's there when I was out doing some motorcycling. Instead, rode rather further than I thought I had and had to come back in fading light. And the headlight on the motorcycle I was riding, I might as well have been a candle for what it was doing on the road. So I ended up having to ride home with the visor up, which meant I was riding at 30 miles an hour, like a novice, in fact. So I learned a hard lesson there.
And the best tinting job I've seen on a visor was many years ago now at the Formula Ford Festival at Brands Hatch. It was a Frenchman, I can't remember his name now, but John Village, who had been around racing a long, long time, was alongside him on the grid, and John just looked across on the starting grid to see this guy. And the guy had his helmet was painted with black and white stripes all the way around the helmet, but he'd managed to get it over the visor as well. And John looked around this guy on the grid, and all he could see are these black and white stripes. He's thinking,
where's the front of his helmet?
Why is the guy looking over at the grandstand to see what's in the grandstand? And at that point, the flag comes out, the race is on. This guy takes off, and John's thinking, what the heck's going on?
How did he see that? He must have been that freak. He's got his helmet on back to front.
Yeah, it was really bizarre.
Doug Kelly's in the pit lane. Doug, what do you have for us?
Well, John, I tell you, a lot of the teams I've been talking to are reporting that the course is considerably more slippery today than was the case last night. It wasn't just one or two clubs. Practically everybody citing the fact that it's a lot hotter and it's a lot more difficult to maneuver right now. So we'll have to monitor that situation closely.
Thanks, Doug. Well, notwithstanding what they're telling Doug, they're still getting faster. But that, again, as we mentioned before, and at risk of repeating what we've been talking about, that will be the drivers getting more confident and more familiar with the layout of the 4.5 mile circuit here. Just under 5 minutes to run. It's still Romain Dumas who has the fastest time, 2:25.4. He leads, and in the P2 category as well. He's just half a tenth away from his teammate. Frank Beale is now at the wheel of the number one R10 TDI Audi. The diesel power has them within half a second of the Porsches.
Yes, but then look right behind that. The two Dyson cars are now really getting on the gas here. Butch Leitzinger has just turned a 2 minutes 27.2, so within a second and three quarters of the quickest time in this session, and less than a tenth of a second slower is Guy Smith in a number 20 Dyson car. So those guys really getting with the program. And we've now got the top six cars. Dindo Capello, the sixth fastest car, the second of the Audi Sharon course with Alan McNish. He is only 2.1 seconds behind the top, the fastest time of the session. So the top six guys covered by just 2 seconds. And on a 2 minutes, 25 second lap, that is competitive.
In GT1, Thomas Enger still holding sway ahead of Johnny O'Connell, who's closed in to within half a second. So that's an improvement for the three car. And they've gone ahead of their teammates in the four car. The Ollies just another half a second further back. Top three cars separated by just a second. Stefan Sarrazin just taking over the 009 car from Andrea Pacini. Andrea's time that he set earlier on is about a second and a half away from his teammate Thomas Enger. And in GT2, it's still the Ferrari ahead of 1, 2, 3 Porsches. Mika Salo in the 62 Ferrari 430 has 1.2 seconds in hand over Klaus Graf. Now that is a very good run for the Alex Job Racing team. They've not shown their usual form in the first four races of the American Le Mans Series this year, but Alex and the guys been working very hard, running two programs of course this year, parallel program in the Daytona prototypes in Grand Am, and that's putting a lot of air miles on Alex's frequent flyer card. Klaus Graf then in second place, 1.2 seconds back from Mika Salo in the 62 Ferrari. Then it's Pat Long for the Peterson White Lightning team. They look really turned around at Lime Rock. New car, completely new chassis, completely new car. Took the victory, and the defending champions maybe, just maybe now, see some light at the end of the tunnel. Third position for Pat Long, and I think that would be their best qualifying of the season. Yes, it would be. They've only, bizarrely, only qualified as a best of fourth position before this weekend. Fourth in GT2, the first of the Flying Lizards, Johannes van Overbeck in the 45 car. Then Tom Milner Jr. for Multimatic Pianos and rounding off the top six, Seth Nyman. Again, steady running by the 44 Flying Lizards, both of their cars in the top six.
Yeah, and Darren Law, of course, driving with Seth Nyman. And the Tom Milner, that's a great effort, isn't it? In the quickest of the Pianos cars, you'd expect David Bradman and Scott Maxwell to be setting the pace within that team. But Tom Milner Jr. and Gunnar Jeanette are really doing a fine job. They've been quicker in both of the sessions, yesterday evening as well. This afternoon, Tom, last time around, did a 2 minutes 48.1, just within a tenth of a second, the best that car has done, a 2:48.002, a little bit earlier this afternoon. Gunnar Jeanette, who shares that car with Tom Milner Jr., he's one of the few drivers that have some reasonable experience on this track. He works with the racing school here based at Miller Motorsports Park, but there's Tom Jr. Right up there as well and turning some very, very good laps.
And we've got a prototype off in the dust, have we, in the distance, just looking over the far side of the circuit, or is it someone driving round the perimeter road?
Yeah, I think it was somebody off the road here, actually.
Yeah, and it is...
It's
the Dyson again. Uh-oh. Now, which Dyson is that? I thought I could see the silhouette of a prototype car. Already I can see the Chevy safety truck rolling. I think that's the 20 car again.
I think you might be right, because Guy Smith had just improved. He'd just done a 2:26.7, so within 1.2 seconds. Yeah, exactly, splitting the Audi. So Guy really getting on there, doing a super job in the Norcold car of Dyson Racing. But I think it might well be that car that is off the road on the exit or around about the exit of turn one somewhere.
Yeah, and it's not really done him too much problems, because the checkered flag has just come out spot on the hour. So Romain Dumas in the number 7 Penske Porsche that he shares with Timo Bernhard has the satisfaction of knowing that so far, two sessions in, he has topped the timesheets on both of them, a 2:25.4, just about 3 tenths slower than he went last night, but still good enough by about half a tenth from Sascha Maassen and Lucas Lowe, their teammates in second place. 7 and 6 then are the first two cars on the timing monitor in front of Jeremy and myself. Frank Beeler, the best of the rest and the first of the P1 category, just half a second behind Sascha Maassen. And that represents an improvement relatively between the Audi and the Porsches of about a second since last night, in conditions that clearly don't favour improvement with warmer temperatures here this morning. Behind them, Guy Smith in the number 20 Thetford Norcold Dyson, which we believe, yes, it is Guy that is out there on the circuit, because Butch Lighting has just come through in front of me. And Dindo Capello improves right at the end and slots in behind the number 1 Audi. So Dindo just a couple of tenths slower than Frank Beeler in third place, so the R10 TDIs are third and fourth, but more importantly, first and second in P1 as we head towards our final practice session before qualifying this afternoon.
This is going to be fun this afternoon, no doubt about it. We've got the Porsche still at the front, as you say, but the Audis and the Dyson Lolas are right there with them as well. We've got the top six cars covered by just 1.7 seconds on this 4.5 mile racetrack. There's Duncan Dayton. He set a couple of reasonable laps last time around. He's about 7 seconds off the leaders, 2:33.2 last time around for Duncan, but he and Andy Wallace, they seem to be getting to grips now with that Highcroft Racing car.
Yeah, behind them, Mike Lewis and the 12 Autocron car, the similar car from last year. Liz Halliday finished the session for the 37 Intersport car, and an improvement at the end for the 009 Aston Martin. Stefan Zarazan didn't have a lot of time, certainly didn't have half the session, jumped in at the end there, and he's turned a 2:37.6, which is exactly a second quicker than they went last night. Just ahead of his teammate by half a tenth, Thomas Enger finished the session for the 007 team, and the Ollies got back ahead of Johnny O'Connell and Ron Fellow. So it's 4 and 3. So 009, 007, 4 and 3 in GT1.
Yeah, and all covered by just around about 1 second, less than 1 second.
Yeah, that's more like it. I got a bit worried in the middle there when we were starting to talk about a second and a half and 2 seconds, but it's gone back to normal. And GT2 just started to close up as well. A second and a bit between the top three or four.
Yeah, and Patrick Longan improving there, his last lap around. He gets down into the 2:45s, so within a second now of Mika Salo. And I don't think, I've been watching the times reasonably closely. I don't think Mika Salo himself has got down below 2:46. If he did, I apologise and I missed it, but I've seen him doing a string of 2:46s and 2:47s. His last lap around was a 2:47.3. That compares to his teammate, Jaime Melo, who's done a 2:45.0, and Patrick Long there, a 2:45.995, so just sneaks beneath the 2:46 bracket. So good effort there by Patrick.
So just to round off the GT2, it's 62, the Ferrari, by almost a second, 0.9 of a second between Salo and Long at the end there. 31 in second for Peterson White Lightning, 23 Klaus Graf in third position for Alex Job, 45 the first of the Lizards. Johannes van Overbeck seemed to do the lion's share of the work in that session. Tom Milner Jr., great run for the 51 Multimatic. Panos in fifth. Sixth, Seth Nyman and Darren Law in the 44 Flying Lizards. Problems at the end there for Dyson, and Doug Kelly is down in the Dyson pit.
John, fortunately for the Dyson camp, the number 20 Dyson Lola, no problem structurally with the car. Guy Smith was looking for a little more push and ended up spinning it into the large restraining area, so to speak. So fortunately for the team, nothing wrong with the car, and they expect to be back full bore this afternoon.
And our next ALMS action starts this afternoon, local time at 3 o'clock. So that is 10 o'clock in the evening in the UK, 11 in mainland Europe, and we'll roll straight off that 60-minute practice session into the qualifying. GT cars first for 20 minutes, and then the battle for pole with the prototypes. There's a bit of alliteration there. That's another 20 minutes, and that'll start at just after 20 minutes to 4 o'clock. 5 o'clock rather this afternoon, local time. My thanks to Doug Kelly, who's been patrolling the pit lane, and to Jeremy Shaw, who joined me in the booth. We'll give the PA system back at Miller Motorsport Park to Tom Natcher, who's getting ready for the next driver action, track action, which I believe is a qualifying session for the Star Mazdas, I think. So we'll pass that over to Tom right now. In the meantime, we'll continue for our international audience and Tim Greer in the studio back in London.
The track itself was faster last night, and we see now that the two Porsches about just over a second slower than they went last night, but the other guys, with the familiarity, getting used to the cars, dialed into the track, and the drivers getting familiar with where the track goes,
they're closing that gap,
and I think this afternoon we are in for a fascinating session of qualifying.
And before that full 60 minutes of final practice, you'll hear it all here on the American Le Mans Series radio network. But from me and the team for now, it's goodbye from Utah. Join us 10 o'clock UK time this evening. Begin the countdown to find out who will claim pole position for the fifth round of the American Le Mans Series 2006. Hello, mate.
It wasn't me, it was Gary Champion who you handed back to in the studio there.
Really, I didn't realise.
Because it's a little something for the weekend.
Ah.
And I also came out at the point where you said Tim Gray as well, so that last minute or so that you chatted with Jeremy was just between you and me.
Yeah, no problem. Well, do you want me to do any trails or anything like that for later, or do you want to wait till after qualifying and then we can
do
trails for race?
After qualifying. I shall leave this line connected.
Okay.
Depending on the...
Are you in tonight?
Yes, I'm off to the pub now, though.